Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. How much progress has been made to open new TV possibilities on and off the screen for people with disabilities? An answer and more from Respectability Vice President Lauren Applebaum when she joins me next. Legends of the Hidden Temple, one of Nickelodeon's most ambitious game shows of the 1990s, returns Sunday night on the CW. War Game, Temple Legends, and Races to See, and never fear, OMAC is here. Executive producers Scott Stone and Marcus Fox detail all next half hour in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, a dance channel in the making, news no quickies, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Welcome to the program about TV's current and future on this Friday afternoon, the 8th of October, 76 degrees, top of the hour. Happy to have you with us. Great hour in store for you, wonderful guests, and we invite you to be interactive with them. All you got to do is pick up the phone and give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone? No problem. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or TuneIn screen, following instructions of the people live with you. Lauren Applebaum, no relation from Respectability, joins us live outside the nation's capital after these news notes. Popular choreographer Lorianne Gibson is adding a new title to her considerable resume, TV Service Entrepreneur. Gibson is putting together BOP, that's VOP Network, a dance-centric undertaking that will be distributed through smart TV sets and devices. Multi-channel organization Citadine will partner with Gibson to get BOP, that stands for Born Out of Passion, off and playing. The service will feature movies, original and acquired series, music and dance videos, and dance classes and workouts. Gibson and Citadine did not release a launch date for BOP, which will be advertiser-supported. Food Network has no comment at this hour about reports that it will part ways with Bobby Flay, one of the channel's most popular personalities. Flay has served as a program host, judge, and producer on various Food Network programming over the last 27 years. His current network contract expires at the end of this year. And once again, no word yet from either Flay or Food Network about those reports. Now some quickies. Netflix's On My Block spinoff is a go. Free Ridge is the name and is expected to premiere next year. Insecure co-star Yvonne Orji will host My Mom, Your Dad, a dating series involving single parents for HBO Max. The Office creator Greg Daniels and daughter Haley will oversee this venture. By the way, this is Greg Daniels' first unscripted project. Amazon will bring The Legend of Vox Machina to animated life February 4th. Amazon broke the news earlier today during a virtual New York Comic-Con event here in the Big Apple. More Amazon developments. The final season of The Expanse, which originally started its run on Sci-Fi, this will be season 6, kicks off December 10th. And popular chef G. Garvin comes to Aspire TV with new primetime series October 17th. Title, G. Garvin Live. And that is news notes for today. A couple of years ago in this program, we introduced you to an advocacy organization that was all about one thing, try to open up more opportunities in various fields for people with disabilities. The organization is called Respectability, and ever since, they've been doing a lot of work to try to get more opportunities in the world of television, both on and off camera. How are they doing, and is the TV industry paying attention? Well, joining us live, back with us, from Rockville, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, one of the key people at Respectability, Vice President Lauren Applebaum. And just to let you know, she spells her last name A-P-P-E-L, mine L-E, so we are not related. Lauren, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. And yes, everyone always misspells my name. They defer to your spelling.
Totally understand. So let me pose the question I posed at the top of the program. How much, since you were last here, how much progress has been made by the TV industry to open up new possibilities on the screen for people with disabilities?
Sure. Unfortunately, I don't have numbers to kind of back things up. I'd love to be able to say that there's been a great increase in representation, but unfortunately, that's not necessarily true. In film, for example, in terms of speaking or named characters, according to USC. Just 2.3% of characters have a disability, and that number really hasn't changed much in 5 years. However, what I do have to share is more anecdotal evidence. And so over the past 5 years, my team and I have been really privileged to be able to work with a lot of studios and production companies to help them ensure more authentic representation of disability on screen and better hiring practices behind the camera. And in the past few years, the number of requests have really increased exponentially. For example, in 2019, we consulted on about a dozen television episodes and films. In 2020, that number grew to 70 during that year, and already in 2021, through October 2021, we've consulted on an additional 170 TV episodes and films. So what that means is most of the content that we consulted on in 2020 and 2021 has not yet reached our screens, and so that gives me a lot of hope for the content that we're going to get to see on our screens in the next 2 to 3 years, since, you know, animation, for example, could take 3 to 5 years to actually come to see us. And I'm very hopeful that some of these stats that we haven't seen a huge amount of movement on yet will be very, very different in the next 3 to 4 years.
Are there any particular television projects that you and your organization are very excited about, that you see them as breakthroughs?
Yeah, so to be honest, most of the content that we're working on right now is still under NDA, so I can't talk about a lot of the content. One show that my colleague Tatiana Lee and I consulted on last year, we consulted on an episode of New Amsterdam and on NBC, and that's a show that consistently thinks about casting authentically and telling new disability stories. Grey's Anatomy recently, you know, has Shoshana Stern on as a doctor, really pushing these storylines. She is a deaf woman, really pushing these storylines of promoting disabled individuals, not just as patients in these medical stories, but also as doctors. And so right now in New Amsterdam, for example, there is a new doctor, also deaf, who is being pursued to kind of potentially even take over the hospital. So it's really showing that people with disabilities shouldn't just be shown as patients in these medical shows, but given the opportunity to be shown as doctors, because why can't we be doctors? And what we see on our screen influences how medical schools react when disabled and deaf individuals apply to the school, and then how patients react if they walk in and see that their doctor is deaf or uses a wheelchair or has some other disability.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we should point out that before the Grey's Anatomy deal, Shoshana and her partner did a series that ran for 2 seasons that they wrote and produced on Sundance Now. We had them on the program, by the way, and they're
wonderful.
Pair, and I hope that they will do another series down the road.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Go ahead, Lauren.
It's always great when disabled creatives are given the opportunity to kind of create their own content as well, because and that's a huge focus of ours at Respectability. While our end result goal is to have more authentic portrayal on screen, we don't actually work with actors on a regular basis. We do work with people behind the camera much, much more, because we very much feel that when you have disabled writers in the writer's room, people doing casting, people in charge of hiring decisions, that they're the ones who are going to influence what we see on screen. So it's wonderful when we can ensure that disabled creatives have the opportunity to kind of create their own content to really ensure that it is portrayed in an authentic way.
We're talking about Respectability. That's the advocacy organization that's out to cause TV and other media and other business opportunities for disabled people. We are talking with Lauren Applebaum, no relation to yours truly. She is one of the key vice presidents at this organization, and she's joining us live outside Washington, D.C. in Rockville, Maryland, great arena, by the way. This half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard. 763 at the top of the hour. Have a question or comment for Lauren? Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, The Sinner begins its fourth season on USA Network next week. We'll have an exclusive interview with executive producer and showrunner Derek Simon. And then we will interview the founder and chief executive of a brand new service available on smart TV sets and devices. It's a multi-channel bundle called Audio.io. It's all about music videos, a collection of very unique music video channels. Nick Sharp is the person who put that venture together. You'll hear him Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Lauren, how fast does respectability jump on an opportunity when a Warner Brothers, a Netflix, an NBC, an ABC, and so forth, make an announcement about something that could be a big opportunity? For example, in 1 week, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had not one, not two, but three announcements of new series that will definitely impact people with disabilities. Netflix is doing a miniseries based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning program where the lead actress is going to be blind, and they have put their foot in the door saying, we're going to be on the hook to have a lead actress who is blind in that major role. And XTS Television, independent production company, is going to be adapting a Belgian format, a prize-winning one called Team Chocolate, which is about a character with Down syndrome who is a worker at a chocolate factory, falls in love with somebody. Then when that somebody decides to move away, he and some of his workplace colleagues in sort of Route 66 fashion go around the countryside to try to find this person and at the same time meet up with all sorts of cultures. So when these projects are announced, how fast does your organization get involved with them?
So our goal actually is to be involved before anything is announced, because lots of decisions are made before any announcement is made. And so we are fortunate to be working with many studios where we kind of have year-long arrangements with them where they get certain number of hours of consulting per month, and they know that they can call us up with, you know, a crisis or anything like that. And I think that has been working really, really well. And so we are often in the room before these decisions are made and helping in some cases to impact some of these decisions. Just in the past few months, we've been involved with two different productions where when we first received an outline or a script, the representation of disability, it wasn't so great, and they were not planning on casting authentically. After several conversations, decisions were reversed, and all of a sudden they decided that they were going to cast authentically, and they were taking revisions to the script. And that's important where we have to be, and that's why the relationships over several years are really, really important, because we're really lucky to have built up that level of trust where we've been able to work with different studios and production companies where we can be very honest with them and tell them why it will be an issue if they don't cast authentically or if they have representation that just isn't correct. And no one wants to get in the situation where they have a project and then the community is going to, dismiss it or talk badly about it. So our goal really is to be there in the very early planning stages so we can help them figure out what to do correctly and ensure things like authentic casting and accurate representation.
Is there a particular production company or programming service you can hold up to as like a model for how they're dealing with this subject, whether it's a Netflix or an NBC or an individual show like a Grey's Anatomy or New Amsterdam?
Sure. I mean, it's a little hard for me to give some examples because almost all the projects we have are under NDAs. I'm going to speak a little bit more generally, that children's content creators tend to be the most receptive in conversations, because I think when someone's creating content for children, then they already have in the back of their mind that they are creating content that is going to influence people in a very big way, because we know that children are influenced very easily by what they see. And whether it's educational content or not, then they just understand that there's a weight on their shoulders that what they do should be correct.
Hmm. How has the pandemic over the last 18 months impacted what you do? I know you've been doing some special panels, some special events. Some of them, a lot of them, have been virtual. What's been the? How have you dealt with this in terms of your outreach, and what kind of response are you getting from people at the other end?
Because disabled individuals may or may not be able to travel as easily as others, we've been doing virtual events even prior to the pandemic. So that made it a little bit easier that we already knew how to do that and ensure that things were fully accessible in a virtual manner. And so we've been doing various events, and currently right now it is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. So we have our NDEAM Entertainment Media Summit going on right now. And, for example, this coming Tuesday, James Caverly, who is a deaf actor, and ASL consultant Douglas Ridoff from Hulu's Only Murders in the Building are going to be joining us. And the following week, Kurt Yeager from Netflix's Another Life is going to be joining us. And then we have other trainings that we are doing. It's important to me that we figure out ways to give back to the community. All these events are completely free for disabled creatives. So in addition to kind of having external speakers, we have, you know, trainings with our fellow and lab alum, Kaya Amara, on how to be a production accessibility coordinator, something that they've been doing for a long time. Rooms to, about how to get a job in the writer's room with some of our lab alumni who have had success in writing. For example, Mark Mazinski, who recently has credits for the upcoming Showtime's Dexter, and Diana Romero and CW's 4400. And then another session we're doing is personal finance and budgeting, because there could be additional concerns when you're a disabled creative in this industry. And so we've been doing lots of different types of events, both kind of forward-facing panels, networking sessions, and just opportunities for people to learn. We often do these for our lab alumni, but we figured why not make this open more to the community of additional folks that haven't had the opportunity to go through our lab but are looking to be able to learn as well.
Mm-hmm. In recent years, especially in this last year, there are now new ways for new TV programming to get financed and on the air, things like crowdfunding, blockchain, cryptocurrency, now non-fungible tokens. We're starting to see organizations spring up to try to get new shows on the air in any or all of these ways. Has Respectability done any undertakings in terms of telling, like, creatives who are disabled, you know, try going to Kickstarter, try going to Indiegogo or WeFunder or other organizations like that, or to check out blockchain ventures, check out cryptocurrency, and see if that might be a way to get your project on the air?
You know, in terms of financing a film to get it done, that's one area that we have not been very involved in. We very much focus on trying to connect people. So we know that there are different avenues through Film Independent, for example, for independent filmmakers, where we'll kind of try to connect them to existing opportunities. But we haven't really done much in terms of financing, in terms of, you know, crowdfunding or things like that. What we do is that, you know, I'm very privileged to have some amazing relationships and with various folks who understand that many disabled creatives are not represented. I've been able to kind of make some introductions to folks within the studio system where someone might not have been able to get that meeting because they didn't have a manager or an agent. And so that is one way that we try to help people once they have, like, a great idea and they've pulled together a team where potentially it could get picked up by a studio or production company.
Hearing Lauren Applebaum, she is one of the vice presidents at Respectability, the advocacy group on behalf of people with disabilities trying to open up opportunities in TV, other media, and other ways of life. And she joins us live from Rockville, Maryland this half hour. That's outside Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. On Tomorrow We Televise. Found out I'm with you live from New York. And request your comment. I'm meeting this with Lauren. Don't be shy. Make the phone call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, you'll meet Bob Sullivan. he got in the news this week because he has launched his own plumbing venture. He's jumping into the TV fray with a project called Bandit Productions, and he's already got a couple of series up and in production. You'll meet Bob and what he's up to with Bandit Productions a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Earlier this summer, we had the Paralympic Games out of Tokyo, and I'm wondering if Perspective Billy had done anything working with NBC Sports to get access out to people with disabilities. It seemed that they had more coverage than before, and I'm wondering if you do anything with either them or with other sports programming providers to try to showcase projects like Paralympics, Special Olympics, and so forth on a wider scale.
Actually, one project that we were pulled in to help was with Nickelodeon. So they, through their social channels for children, were trying to figure out ways to include disabled athletes, young athletes, and using the Paralympics as kind of a hook, pulled us in to help them ensure that a lot of the work on their YouTube, for example, was portrayed authentically. We helped them with casting. We helped that we took a look at the content. And so in terms of being able to kind of assist in other ways to try to using the Paralympics as kind of a hook to amplify in other areas of media as well. And it was such a wonderful thing that so many more hours of the Paralympics were actually shown on TV. And that should be the norm. Like, you know, we should be able to see the Paralympics just as easily as we are able to see the Olympics.
And I might add, Lauren, for the very first time, I believe that NBC itself, the broadcast network, had coverage of the Paralympics on a Sunday night for the first time. So that was
yes, that was first time, and I'm hoping that continues, yes.
Yeah. I also wanted to get your thoughts on a controversy that broke with the CW several years ago, and that was the TV series In the Dark, which is now in its fourth season. The problem was not the fact that the show had a blind character. It was about the fact that the actress was not blind. And there were also other concerns about that. And I'm wondering if you can give us an update on where things stand with that controversy, whether things have smoothed out with the CW over this, whether there's been some progress. What can you tell us about that?
So authentic casting is a huge, huge topic and something that is really very important for kind of all underrepresented populations. And so it's something that we're noticing happening with all the networks right now when they don't cast authentically, that they are called out for it. I try and do more of a call-in culture where I'm educating people before the casting even occurs on the importance of bringing in people with that lived disability experience. It is very – speaking as someone who – was born without a disability and acquired my physical disability, you can't teach someone how to act like they have a disability. It is a lived experience. And so when you don't cast authentically, you're missing out on having a really good portrayal of that character. Someone with that lived experience is going to be able to bring so much more to the character's portrayal than someone pretending to have that disability.
Mm-hmm. What is the main TV objective for this coming year with your organization? For example, we now have this new generation of gatekeepers. Many of them are people of color that are now at the various networks and programming services. Bella Bajarian, for example, head of global TV programming at Netflix. Perlina Dike, now one of the key people at NBC Universal. And Tara Waldron, the creator of Freeform. The president of Freeform is also in the Onyx Collective, which is trying to encourage more programming aimed at people of color, the disabled, other what they call underrepresented audiences or populations, if you will. Is that going to be, let's say, a priority moving forward? What do you see as like the main TV priority for Respectability this year ahead?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that disability cuts across every other demographic. And so in order to be truly inclusive of any demographic, you have to include disability. And when you're talking about disability, you have to include people of all different races, sexual orientations, genders, et cetera. And so at first, like 5-6 years ago, my conversations were centered on ensuring that disability was just part of the conversation. A lot of people, when they were having kind of DEI conversations, didn't include disability in kind of the list of what they were doing. Now most are including disability, but now it's looking at it in a very intersectional way, that people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, ethnicities, et cetera, you know, 1 in 4 adults in America have a disability. When you include children, the number is 1 in 5, and that's because the longer we live, the more likely we are to acquire a disability due to illness, accident, or aging. And so in order to really be representative of any population, you need to include people with disabilities within that population as well.
By the way, I hope you caught the opening of the show. We talked about this new All Dance channel that Laurie Ann Gibson is doing. Do you see that might be a possibility for something that you might get involved with?
It's not something that I'm aware of yet, but, I mean, we're always open to new opportunities. I did want to share about one show. I know you and I had kind of talked about it via email before on Peacock called Born for Business. And that was kind of, that was produced by Bona Murray Productions. They had done Born This Way. And that's a really interesting unscripted show that follows the lives of 4 business owners with disabilities. And what is really unique is they started shooting and then COVID hit. And so the goal of the series, you know, it's still the same, but what they thought they were going to get totally had to change because of COVID. So I think that this is something that can be of interest to all audiences, whether you're a business owner, whether you have a disability, or whether it's something about COVID interrupted your life, which I think is everyone. And what is great about it is it's on the free version of Peacock, so you don't have to be on the paid version, so it is open and accessible to everyone to watch.
If you want more details about Respectability and the great work that it does, here's where you go online, www.respectability.org. It's www.respectability.org. And as always, when these new projects happen, we'll be very happy to have producers, directors, writers, et cetera, with disabilities on this program. They are always welcome, period. End of story.
Thank you.
Lauren, thank you so much for coming back on the program. Congratulations on what you and your organization continues to do, and hopefully much more progress in the years ahead.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Lauren. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Lauren Applebaum from Respectability joining us live from Rockville, Maryland, outside the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. More tomorrow will be televised, coming away with first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you love to hear the stories behind the music, I mean really hear the stories behind the music, well, there's a brand new audiobook for you by one of the top musicians in this nation. His name is Dave Grohl. And he's just come out with an audiobook called The Storyteller. It's all about his music and his efforts to write it and what he learned from the songs he's written and sung. And you can get The Storyteller right now, if you like, with a trial subscription to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and our various podcast destinations. If you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, it's audibletrial.com/televised, get 1 free audiobook, you get a 1-month trial of the service, health and wellness information could make a difference in your life or someone you know while the supply lasts, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, you get 2 audiobooks for your trial of one. One of those could be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original podcast series and audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man shows. And if you become an Audible member now, you will save nearly half off on your first books in your first 4 months of service. So check that out. It's a great discount, particularly with the holidays coming up. And remember, Audible makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. So for all the details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, Legends of the Temple and Nickelodeon fans, get ready. One of your favorite TV series is back, starting Sunday night on the CW, and we'll have the executive producers live. Scott Stone and Marcus Fox joins us from Los Angeles as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. It's www.blogtalkradio.com, streaker.com, and tunein.com. Together, reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Sisters United, very popular show. It's all about women, all about music, all about life in general. involving people like you. Sisters United, that's Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Sisters United, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon edition on the 8th of October, 2021. Tom and I'm with you live from New Weber, York, 76 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our pair of guests coming up, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Of all the game shows that Nickelodeon has done, maybe one of the most ambitious ever was Legends of the Hidden Temple. It ran for two seasons, I believe starting in 1993, and it immediately became a smash sensation. I mean, who could ever forget Kirk Fogg as the host, all those contestants, the moat, and all those very uniquely named teams like the Purple Parrots and the Blue Barracudas and the Red Jaguars and Silver Snakes and so forth. And how about OMAC giving us all those legends, including the rare artifact that somebody had to find for some nice prizes? Well, on Sunday night, at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the CW, Legends is back. And joining us live to talk about it are the two executive producers, Scott Stone and Marcus Fox, live from Beverly Hills, California. Scott and Marcus, welcome in.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hello.
And Scott, we'll start with you. I'm sure that in the decades since, you've been asked a number of times, when are you going to bring Legends back? When are you going to bring Legends back, especially in recent years when Nickelodeon had the original made-for-TV movie with the first host, Kirk Fogg, on it? What made you decide, along with Marcus, that this was the time to bring it back?
Frankly, it was the audience that decided it was time to bring it back. We've had so much love for this show. You know, I've done a lot of TV shows, and every single meeting I have, it came up, and finally the CW said, let's go do this.
Marcus, why do you think this show has had the kind of following it's had, and it's stayed or expanded over the decades?
Well, it really did stay. It's often considered a touchstone for a certain demographic. There was an age range back in the 90s who came in from school at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, threw down their school bag and landed on the couch. And if they were lucky enough to have cable, they put on Nickelodeon and they watched the show and it stuck with them. And then Nickelodeon found it was so successful, they repeated it for years, decades even. So a lot of people have been asking for it to come back through social media for years. So we're really excited to finally be back here and ready for the premiere.
Mm-hmm. Scott, once the CW gave you the green light, how fast did you have to move to get your production team, Marcus included, together and figure out how do we, in this game show environment, and under the CW, how do we adapt this show for the times right now?
Well, the funny thing about that is we've been dreaming about it and talking about it for about 5 years. So we've had a lot of time to get ready to say, what would the show be for this demographic? And I teach college at USC in the film school. So every year my students, as they age, would all they'd want to talk about is this show. We talk about the way we might be able to bring it into a new age. So when they said go, it was really a matter of how quickly can we build this set, because it's massive and it's millions of dollars. And we were building it for basically what amounted to about 6 days worth of shooting. That was the harder part. I call it architecture for the impatient, because we are building this thing and then tearing it down.
Yeah, Marcus, this is not from the Nickelodeon Studios in Orlando, Florida. This is on location. Natural surroundings, if you will. Was it very easy to find the setting that you and Scott wanted to do this revival, to set up the temple, to set up OMAC, to set up all the obstacles?
It wasn't an easy task. We were looking for the right location for a long time. OMAC's temple is set in a Mayan jungle. So, you know, the ideal place to shoot it would be in the Yucatan Peninsula, where the Maya really lived for a long time. But we couldn't go there due to timing and COVID and budgetary restrictions. So we had to bring the jungle to California. So we found a wonderful location out in Simi Valley, and we had to bring in some of the greenery that was required to give it the aesthetic that we really felt it needed.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, one of the big things, of course, is that OMAC is back. Dee Bradley Baker, the voice. Was it a very quick deal to get him to come back and do the voice? I saw a clip of him on Facebook this morning talking about coming back as OMAC. And, like, the voice has not changed. It's just as great as back in the 90s.
We had a lot of discussion about Olmec, and as soon as Dee agreed to do it, it was the light bulb went on, and that became the show. He is Olmec, and he is just amazing, and the same as he always was. You know, when we met him, he was at Epcot working in the French Pavilion, and he'd never really done a lot of television before, and now he is such a superstar in the voice actor business. It's great to have been part of that career with him, and when he agreed to come back, that was kind of that was a touchstone for the show for me. As much as I do love Cristela Alonso and I do want to talk about her, she is amazing as our host, and we really lucked out when we got her.
Yeah, let's talk about Cristela. I saw the opening episode 2 days ago, and one of the things I noticed is that she is like, you know, right in the, you know, here's somebody who has had a lot of experience, stand-up comedian. She had once her own show on sitcom on ABC. And it seems that she just fit right into the proceedings, you know, the sort of spirit of adventure that you see right from the opening moment.
I'm going to give you a little inside television scoop. It was the very last minute that we worked out the arrangement for her to come, and she literally flew in from out of town the morning we started shooting. So as much as we loved her from talking to her, we'd never really tried her out on the show, and we were in the middle of the nowhere, literally on a cow farm. Which would be a ranch, I think. Isn't that where they put cows? I'm a city boy, I guess. So she walked out there. She walked on the set, and she owned it like she had been doing this her whole life. She just loves people, and she loves doing the show, and she's the perfect kind of cheerleader, camp owner, fun time person you want to hang out on the weekends. She had me when she told me that she likes to do Legos on the weekends. I'm like, okay, you're perfect for the show. A little bit of nerd, lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. Legends of the Hidden Temple is back starting Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on the CW. And we have the two executive producers involved, Scott Stone, who originally co-created the show for Nickelodeon back in the 90s when he was part of the famous Stone Stanley Enterprise. There's a little thing called Chop Q Drop also, which Dee Bradley Baker was also on for Stell, along with Pat Finn and crew. And Marcus Fox, the other executive producer. And they're both with us live from Beverly Hills, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy you're aboard for the ride, too. Simon Albon with you from the other side of the U.S. of A., New York, 76 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, USA Network kicks off season 4 of its critically acclaimed miniseries, The Sinner, with Bill Pullman in one of the lead roles. Jessica Biel, still the executive producer. We'll have executive producer and showrunner Derek Stenmans will be with us in an internet radio exclusive. And then you'll meet a new entrepreneur in terms of doing services for smart TV sets and smart devices. The service is called Audio.io. It's a collection of music video channels. He's the founder and chief executive officer. His name is Nick Sharp, and you'll meet him Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, along with the Sinner's Derek Simon, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Scott, give us a sense of how the game evolves in this version from what it was back in the 90s on Nick.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, we learned this from a lot of the reboots that have gone on TV right now. When you have a format, don't mess with it. So we knew we wanted to keep all the basic elements, and the question was, how do you take a 22-minute show and make it into an hour show? And we had a little bit of a pit stop because, as you probably know, we were originally going to do this show for Quibi, and that meant that we had created an 8-minute version of the show. So we went from 22 minutes down to 8, and then it was, okay, how do we make that into an hour? And thankfully, what we added is everything in between that we couldn't do originally, because when we did the show in the 90s, there was no reality TV. There was no Survivor. There was no Mole. There was no Big Brother. There was no Amazing Race. So all the conceits that we created in the end of the 2000s, early 2001s, of interviewing and getting really into the contestants' lives and their enjoyment of the show and their strategies, that's the element that we added that we didn't have originally, and it just fits like a glove. We also were able to develop out the storytelling aspect of the show, which is my favorite part, and truthfully, what I hope is one thing that I bring to all my shows is that it's a story from beginning to end, and we were able to really develop out that part, the sort of legendary story part. And I hope you enjoyed that part, because that's the part I put all my extra effort into.
Scott, I did. How did you? Who were the artists who put that those sequences together?
We are using an outside animation company named I keep calling him Baby Bear or Sugar Bear, but I think they're called Brown Bear, something Bear. Dream Bear. Thank you. I knew it. Good thing people are here in the office with me. Yes, but I call them a different bear every time I mention their name. They're terrific, and we went to them very late in the process and said, we really want a graphic novel-style approach to our storytelling, because we made a – this is the one big shift we made in the series besides it being for adults, is we – the original show was about historical figures, so I like to talk about – the lucky pig of Amelia Earhart, or the golden pepperoni of Catherine de Medici. And I don't, we didn't want to do those same stories. We wanted deeper stories that were more about real people, and real, not real people, but real human behavior. So we went down into the treasure trove of classic legendary stories from every culture in the world. And the one that you saw was the story of the Hero Twins, which is a Mayan story, which we picked specifically for our premiere because it does take place in the Mayan temple. And those stories are deep and rich with great human struggles in sort of a Joseph Campbell kind of way. And I know it seems silly for a game show to be talking about Joseph Campbell and the human struggle and going into the belly of the beast, but that is exactly what we tried to accomplish. And what's great is our contestants immediately got into the spirit of digging deep into their own experience to really bring those stories to life. We also do, the second episode is the story of the goddess Pele, the Polynesian Hawaiian goddess of volcanoes and fire. And it's a great, interesting story about she and her sisters and their relationships. And I really enjoyed telling those stories.
Mm-hmm. Marcus, you've had some experience doing this kind of outdoor game. You had a show called Paradise Run. How did that experience translate in getting Legends going?
It translated in many ways, although that was a show with kids, and this time we had adults. This was also with Scott and Stonico. That one we actually got to shoot in Hawaii. So we didn't have to bring the greens. Those existed. We just had to bring the kids. Because working with young people is really a treat, and it was a pleasure to do. But there are more steps, right? You have to be a little bit safer and a bit more careful about the challenges and so on, and you have to bring in their parents. So there was a lot more involved. Now, although we shot this during COVID, at least we were working with adults, so it had different kinds of difficulties in the sense that we had to do all our testing and wear masks, but at least we were able to let them come and go at their own timing. They're different shows, but there was some similar DNA in there for sure.
Yeah. Scott, when you saw the first contestants go into that temple, and I have to, and I'm not going to spoil it because I think the scene, I just think the scene is really great and well staged too. What kind of inner emotions did you get when you saw that first pair go into that temple for the first time and something like that for the first time in decades?
It's a very strange, sort of surreal feeling because when we were doing it in the 90s, it had also not been done, and that set was designed by Eden Byron, the two people that originally did all the Nick sets down in Orlando. They did an amazing job of bringing to life this fantasy of sending people into what originally was actually supposed to be monsters in a haunted house, and we changed it to a temple and temple guards. And the idea that we were bringing it back to life with adults and the fact that we wanted them to have the same experience was surreal. The fact that they did and they embraced it, and, you know, the amazing story, and this is, you know, when you do a TV show, no one can predict which one's going to be the one that touches people's lives. When we set out to do the auditions for the show, we thought we would get a couple thousand applicants that would be interested in coming to California to be on the show. We had over 24,000 in the first 2 weeks, and we're now over 50,000 applicants of people who want to run through the temple to prove they're worthy. And that, to me, even more so than the physical structure, which was monumental to build outdoors, you learn things like, oh, wait a minute, the sun and the heat are going to make those doors warp, and they don't open as easily as they do when you're in an air-conditioned studio. So the that part of it aside, just the sheer joy of people's faces, and then the scare when the temple guards came out, was worth it every minute.
I'm not going to tell you how that happens, by the way, but it's one of the highlights of the show, is the run and the temple guard situation. Just leave it to me. Marcus, in terms of the casting, how were you able to get the contestants? What did it come down to with 50,000-plus people auditioning?
It came down to interesting and dynamic characters. You know, there was so much interest that our casting company were overwhelmed. In fact, people are still applying. And if anybody would like to, they're welcome to go to legendscasting.com, because our casting company are continuing to add names to the database for season two. So all are welcome. But there was a lot of criteria that we went through. The casting company, Doron Ophir Casting, does amazing work. And he really pushed some incredible people in front of us. We wanted a great cross-section of ages. We wanted diversity. We wanted interesting relationships. So we have everything from siblings to couples to best friends. And some really, really fun people, even some people that were in the original show back in the 90s who wanted to come back and relive that dream. So we've really a fun bunch of people that I look forward to America getting to see this coming Sunday.
Can I did a comic story on this program a couple of weeks ago. So go ahead.
Yeah, your previous guest was talking about something that I thought is a really important topic and something that I care about deeply, about people not, you know, being able to see themselves on television in their authentic form. And we have often and tried really hard this year, frankly, to see if there were some ways that we could take people who are underrepresented in terms of physical handicaps and disabilities to be able to be on our show. And that is a goal for us in the future. Is we actually thought, because the moat is so huge, as you saw, we went through the process of saying, could we find some people who were in wheelchairs or maybe were you know, having other disabilities that might need some help, that could come with a partner, we could put them on a barge and take them across the moat. And that is the future of where I would like this show to go, because it's so important. You know, I always consider my shows to be about anyone could be on them. And they're not always that's not always true. It's really hard to put somebody with certain disabilities into a situation where they have to run through the temple. So then we talked about pinch hitters and things like that. And I just want you to know that is a really important topic that we should continue to work towards to see if there's a way that we can make every show, including Legends of Hidden Temple, accessible to everyone.
That's great. That's really great. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And I hope Respectability can work with you, as well as with the other game show producers, to do that. And I have to say, there have been some game show shows, like Price is Right, for example, that have been fork leaders in terms of having disabled contestants on. I know they've had wheelchair contestants on. There was a very famous segment a year or so ago with Drew Carey with the deaf contestant that won a lot, which was really outstanding, which had a partner, by the way, an interpreter alongside, who won a pricing game. So let's hope that happens. And again, and Respectability, Lauren,
yep.
If you're still hearing us, get in touch with Scott and Marcus. They want to make it happen. So
yeah,
let's see if we can. Legends in the Temple comes your way. First episode of a brand new run this Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the CW, on your local CW station here in New York. It's WPIX Channel 11. And if you have a question or comment on ending this with our duo, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Coming up shortly before the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We have three prizes in play, and they can be yours if you have the correct answer. Stay tuned. Get your thinking caps on, as we hope you to be our next major winner. By the way, one other thing I like about this program is in an era where we have so many game shows not give contestants who don't win either no prizes or they don't say the parting gifts during the show, what was really great was that everybody who gets on gets something. They don't go the way it has to be handed. And I wanted to hear, Scott, your thoughts about that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of everybody gets a trophy, but I do think that everybody should be compensated for the hard work they do. Whether it's a T-shirt or swag or a Razor scooter or whatever we give them. So that is part and parcel with what we try to do. And always been part of the format of the show, is we always gave away things to everyone for doing it. And you got more based on how well you did. So it's not like we aren't appreciating the fact that the stronger you are and the farther you go, the better the prize. We are widely known, I think, as being one of the harder end games of television, maybe not quite as much as American Ninja Warrior, but it's pretty darn hard to run the temple. So that's the interesting thing with how, you know, you asked about how I felt when the first person ran through the temple. We had no idea how long it was going to take them to do this temple. We had to really put it on its feet and try it first before we set the time, the clock, to determine it, because we could have ended up giving away way too many or none at all. And we wanted to make sure we tried to hit kind of what we did originally. And oddly enough, after the 13th show, we kind of hit the number exactly the same as we had in the original, which is kind of surprising. By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't say, if you can't get the CW at your house, download the CW app and you can watch the shows the next day on Monday morning for free with ads on the CW app or CWTV.com. Sorry, I had to put that plug in, but wanted to make sure I got it.
Scott, the 90s were a big decade for you and Stone Stanley, Shop to Your Drop, Legend in Temple, other shows. What's it like for you to be back in the game show field with one of the great favorites that Nick did in his run?
That's always a great question, although I have to say I haven't really been out of the game show business, because you just mentioned Paradise Run, which I did with Marcus up until about a year or two ago. I love doing game shows. You know, you talked about giving away prizes to people. What better thing can you do than play games and give people stuff? So if that's a job in the world, and it's always been fun. And I love figuring out formats. So for this one, that became part of the joy. Although I would be remiss and not tell you how absurd I think it is sometimes when I look at me still doing this, and you know, my inner 10-year-old boy keeps coming out of I wake up every morning thinking about how I can get people to put on crazy costumes and go run around a set. It's still pretty silly.
Marcus, do you and Scott have any future shows beyond Legends that we'll be watching in the months ahead?
Yes, we have several in development. I can't reveal too much just yet because we're in negotiations, but watch this space and we'll come back to you with that one soon.
I love it. And I'll tell you, I was a big Shop to You Drop fan. I love that show. I loved what that show did, the fact that it ran for so many years. Paxton was a wonderful host, and of course, Mark Wahlberg got his start. And I had Mark Wahlberg on the show sometime back, and I asked about the whole thing about to wear, you know, they came to the catchphrase, to wear, Mark, and G also, to wear, G, when this was the grand prize. He had a nice chuckle about that. And, of course, Mark is now doing NCAA trip to CBS. He's Russian Roulette, a wonderful game, which, by the way, the reruns are now on YouTube. A lot of good people came out of your shows, Scott.
You know, I am blessed with having worked with some extraordinarily talented people, and Christella being part of the family now, I put right up high on that list. It's one of the joys of doing this, and watching them become the D. Bakers of the world is very satisfying.
He, by the way,
whether you saw the original,
he makes me laugh.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Day.
Go ahead, Marcus. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying D makes me laugh every day. We send him a script that we write that we think is going to be okay, and he always makes it brilliant.
Mm-hmm. He does, and I'm very thrilled, and I think a lot of people will be thrilled on Sunday night to see him back as OMAC. And let me tell you, he has not lost a touch. In fact, the touch has gotten greater. Let's just end Temple. It is back. Whether you saw the original on Nick back in the 90s or you're excited to finally see it for yourself, you can, starting Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the CW. Check your locals to the CW station in your area. And don't forget, if you miss the show, you can catch it on the CW app the very next day and download it. And it'll probably also run on CW Seed, which is their service available on smart TV sets and smart devices. For more details about the program online, go to CWTV.com. That's CWTV.com. Legends in Temple, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on your local CW. Scott Stone, Marcus Fox, thank you both for joining us. Congratulations on bringing it back and hopefully much, much more. Hopefully Sunday night's the beginning of a great, great run. Best to everybody, and let's have you back when you have a new show coming on because we'll all be ready for it.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, Scott. You and Marcus, take care. Enjoy.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Scott Stone and Marcus Fox from Legends in the Temple joining us live from Beverly Hills, California. Time for our classic trivia question of the week, and here it is. If you're first with the correct answer, three prizes in play. We've got the wonderful I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet set, the Star Special married by James Seymour, Hollywood Christmas, and the just-published book, Nailed It. Baking Challenges for the Rest of Us, the family cookbook inspired by the popular Emmy-nominated Netflix competition series. Here's the question. Name the 1960s TV lawyer drama starring Carl Betz. Name the 1960s TV lawyer drama series starring Carl Betz. It was on ABC. It was on Friday nights. Betz came off his role, long-running role with the Donna Reed Show. He played Donna Reed's husband. And he won an Emmy Award for this role. And Stephen Young was the co-star. So there's some clues for you. And you can see some of the episodes on YouTube. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Just include your name and where you are. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter EBC Simon TWBT. So get in the win today and all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being with us for a terrific hour. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, we're back on Monday with Derek Simons, executive producer and showrunner of The Sinner. New season premieres next week on USA Network. And Nick Sharp from the new music video bundle on Smart TV Sets Devices, Audio I.O. Don't forget, you can catch up on episodes you missed by going to our homepage, logicradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, available 24/7 on the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other places. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts where TV is at and where it's going? Game shows and other things, too. Email me. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I do respond within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other streams of this program. Andy Toews, BTR General Manager, Jay Sonberg, is Head of Content. Website maintenance provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator, guitarist Bacon. Swabby Televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, audio will transform the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you and someone you love. For all details, audibletrial.com/televised. But Harvey Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, Twitter Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, go over your medical history and your medical condition, and then make a great choice. And guess what? We're licking this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.